Birthday was yesterday, and just everything was kind of lined up perfectly. He would have been 33. Tomorrow it'll be 7 years, brother, since I was at your hospital, hands like two blooming flowers over my eyes. You weren't far. Your room was just past the double doors. Gateway to our new lives. I heard the lighter's flint wheel scratch when they swung open to reveal our father, just as it scratched when you'd get high and your eyes glazed over. He came, face split with tears, to deliver me to you that last time. Lying in the hospital bed alone, I thought it would be peaceful to watch you go, like the weight of who you became. Run free from your being and mine too. Your mouth hung open, accepting the tube going into it. And when you finally expired, the exile tube still left your face wanting, chapped, broken skin curling away from your lips, your tongue drying inside. 7 years. Wind is running through the grass at Landis, matting it down like hair. Just a month before you died, I ran the clippers over your head and let the soft tufts of hair tumble over the back of my hand. Here, if I turned my hand just so, I could feel them fall again. When one you love dies, you remember their eyes. They are always brighter than they actually were, and gleam with a certain knowing, useful for poetry. The truth is, my brother was like the rest of us. His eyes gleamed under the hot bulbs which lined the bathroom mirror. Sometimes they tightened around a small flame. When he shot heroin, his eyes were beautiful then. The pupil expanding, the blue iris a thin halo. Beautiful also, and finally, as the skin over them peeled away from the cremator, briefly revealing their last gleaming and useful gaze upward, as if taken by surprise, before the cornea, feeble coat of wax, boiled off, and the yolky blue muscle fiber underneath hissed for a moment and turned to ash. Each orb then sunk into the crater's socket as the gaze moved toward the melting brain, crackling like the answer to a question you contemplate one morning that sits just on the tip of your tongue. But suddenly, light shifts on the wall and you turn to look out the window. The answer is gone, just as the flame extinguishes due to lack of oxygen. And the eyes are just a memory in the soul, for what they see now cannot be told.
I'm gonna punch these. Oh god.
My brother and me on our stoop at the end of the world. We're sitting where the front door was, blue sky like saran on our faces, so that I barely know it's him, except for the fact we came the same way to be here now, born from the same womb into our life together, really a pinprick of time compared to death's interminable solitude, and here, just months before we rose from soil, bits from our graves like in the movies, uncurling, covered in soot, rock, and roots. That the stoop still here is itself a miracle, as is my brother in the flesh, wearing the robes he was cremated in, arm and arm, leg and leg, down to the lint in his hair, and his scent, like pine bark, every single seared particle's piecemeal to his slender human shape, turning to the sun, doubling like a pitch from a mound, just how we learned it would as children. When we sat on our father's feet, at our father's feet and watched how the world will end on discovery, the TV switching a warm spectrum of colors across my face when the sun slowly overtook Mercury, then Venus, then Earth, and later, as our father put us to sleep, we asked him if he could stop the sun as it expanded to save us. And now I know it's his soul sledding away with the rest, as ours should have, because the sun, the sky is drawn with millions of bodies bursting upwards as the flares hit, each turning into light, as light itself, like a school of fish above a marlin darting toward the water surface, rippling blue ceiling of earth, heat cracked and blown out like a depressurized cabin, peeling up old roads and trees and brickstone buildings, wires too ripped from the ground, entire oceans lifting like smoke until Earth's red as Mars. And what should have taken hundreds of thousands of years all at once is gone, except us. What could I possibly say to him now, his silhouette faintly lit by the halo of stars? All right. Rewind. We moonwalk into Planned Parenthood. Laura uncups her stomach, tears sucked into her eyes, rain on our foreheads to leak. They put the baby back in her. She backs into the waiting room. I stand to cancel a kiss on her lips. And the door behind us opens, and we back outside, backwards into the rain. To her odyssey, we enter ass first. Lana Del Rey's puking. Rain lifts into the cloud cover, and the highway drags us home. It's like this for months. Our faces thin. We spoon stew from our mouths, bulatas from our mouths, spitting coffee into our cups. Our sex is all wrong, though it looks about the same. It sounds like she's crying. I blow away bruises on her neck, and years go by. The sun rises in the west and sets in the east. Every conversation is gibberish, and with each, I know her a little less. She gives the Odyssey back to her father. She moves back with her father. Our first time happens in her childhood bed. We start dating again. She scoops mint ice cream from her mouth at the beach one night. Waves lunge forth and recede far out into the ocean. We meet at the haunted house. I see her sitting on the floor in the angel room, in angel wings, face powdered, eyes popping through shadows, smiling. This stranger, I haven't said a word to her yet. I don't even know her name. In the waiting room at Planned Parenthood, I remember I wrote this poem in David's workshop, the original version. And then I rewrote it in Jamie's workshop. And I don't think I stopped rewriting it. That happens sometimes. In the waiting room at Planned Parenthood, the small hands of wind like specks of rain on the window behind me. The walls of the waiting room are dead skin blue. You feed upward from the ash-gray carpet. The ceiling is flat and popcorned. There's an azalea in the corner. I fold my hands into each other and try to keep my head down. The other men aren't unlike me. One shifts his weight in his chair. One watches Murray like it's a how-to guide. There's nothing to figure out. We are all restless. We all jerk our heads when the door to admittance makes a sound like it might open, but doesn't. I shut my eyes. I see you before me play with a toy farm, pressing the wheels deep into the carpet to make tracks. The pink bell of your dress on the ground like a dollop of paint covers your legs. The hair sticking to your skin shrouds your face. And a ring of dirt around your neck needs to be wiped. I think they call your name. What would we have named you? Something like rain. Something like flowers. Something. I open my eyes. It's the door again. We all look. Laura comes through holding nothing but her damp shirt and a pocket of hair in her open mouth. I stand. I hug her. Her skin is wet. I whisper something basic into her ear that I can't tell you because it would break your heart. Her eyes are shaking. Her chin stretches up like it does when she lays stones on her mother's grave. We begin to leave. I hold her hand. The blue light slips through the front door and the wind's on her chest. There's the protesters, their pickets kissing the ground like distant raindrops. How long do I have? I'll read a couple more. Oh wait, actually, I'll tell you how many I read. I have like four, but we'll see how it goes. All right. Sorry, I'm really nervous. Man,
it's okay,
John! Oh, thank you, Rita. I appreciate you. I stand in the poem at you, dear reader. Remember how I read to you? At random, I picked from the shelf one of the thin spines and spin the pages to a poem. I took you to my dark places, the alleyways and wet streets of Del Rey, or the bathrooms in Florida Atlantic, where I'd sit on the toilet in tears and write to you. It was fine. It was good. When we drank, I wrote you poems as I descended into myself. Night after night, we lined beer bottles along the kitchen counter and walked along Seacrest toward the blinking yellow traffic light at the end of the road. When it was time to go home, we drank water and coffee to steady our hands on the wheel. When the cops pulled us over, your eyes always looked the same, crossed with bars of street pipe, slashing down the length of our bodies in pity and ritual. Why do I love you still? I miss your lips most of all, how they softened when I put my finger on your tongue, how the tongue became wet as I pressed it down, your eyes rounded like soft boiled eggs spooned from their shells, and after we fucked, they cocooned back and you caressed my hair. Then the years split us, I one way and you the other. I saw the pictures of you with your arms around another and another. I, who I am, went further into myself. It's strange what happened when I barred myself against your love, reader. When I would wake, daylight tasted bitter as the beer dried inside my mouth, and wind moved past me like acquaintances at dingy open mics. Even leaves tumbling along the road were afraid to engage me, as if merely occupying their negative space pushed them away. I'm here to tell you I'm back, that I want you back. I want to go to the pier with you again. Listen to it. I can still hear the water break from the barriers pimpled with barnacles below us. When the water splits, the crowd gasps. Isn't that how our love goes? Everyone watching, the inlet is making whirlpools, a beautiful spiral born from the turbulence of two passing bodies of water. Do you hear it, dear reader? Come a little closer. It's night again. The moon is breaking across the ocean like fireworks. Or no, it's like you, how your pupils multiply when you kiss. Girl at Westcott Plaza. One night I heard a girl crying by the fountain as I walked along the arched gate outside the plaza. She had cut holes into her jeans from thigh to shin, so I could see the slits of pale skin as she kicked at the water. Like lifting a delicate lace, each rivulet broke apart in the air. I looked down, and my phone fluoresced upon my face. The girl looked over, not wanting for anything. Her gaze struck me like a reaction to something I had nothing to do with, except that we both have suffered in different ways and at separate times. And I'd like to tell you that I stopped and I gave her a few words, that I was capable of making the stranger laugh. But I just kept walking down the hill towards St. Augustine, to the bars where people would smile, glasses in their hands like ancient jewels, far removed from this or that trouble. But what about the girl at Westcott? Maybe she's still there, watching her reflection in the water. I wonder if it's deep enough to drown yourself.
All right,
I've got two more.
Got it, Sean!
Ooh, I think I got this. Dear reader, in Tallahassee, I still make sure to call my mother back home in West Palm. We just got off the phone a little while ago, and while it was ringing, I laid on the floor and imagined the old apartment, the sleeper robbed of its mattress like a toothless smile. My mother rocking her head back and forth, with her eyes closed when the phone buzzes. When she answered, I smiled, stared into the ceiling as if to find the horizon, and asked her how the beach was looking. She doesn't go to the beach much these days, she said. Most of the sunlight in her life, besides the bars that slip through the shade from their craft, are these phone calls. But, I said, isn't that why you moved down there when I was a baby? Wasn't it the beach? I know, reader. I know the satisfaction taking for granted something so basic, like a parent who's always been there for you. But I asked anyway, wasn't it the beach, Mom? The idea of paradise? No, she said, that's not it. We moved here, here of all places, for more than just the beach. What's your idea of the beach anyway? Shells, snorkels, she laughed. Not at the cliches, I figured, but at the notion that perhaps somewhere in West Palm paradise might be found. No, she said. It was more about being near something so vast as the ocean that changed us. Me and your father, I mean. I wanted you to have that. Lying on the floor, I looked for constellations in the popcorn. Maybe that's Orion there, I thought, next to the ceiling fan. Or maybe I had it wrong my whole life. On the phone, after I told her I loved her, I heard the distance in her voice crack like the wind through mangroves. And finally, before we hung up, she said it too. It's not all that important, I think, to tell you this, that my mother cries when she says I love you, because it's obvious. Like when I first looked out into the ocean when I was little and saw the curved blue edge of the world and wondered why it did that. Right. I'm going to read one more poem, and this is an old poem that I wrote after my brother died, and it was just the first poem that I really liked. And back then, I was just trying to write to get closer to him. I guess that's why you write, get closer to people sometimes. This is it. It's called Blues. The memory is blue, Sarah's car, the windshield covered in dots of rain like freckles. The music's a cold hip-hop, the saxophones and New York City street poets from the early 90s. Here, blue, a breezy, rainy Florida summer afternoon in the parking lot of Park Avenue Barbecue. Shane went in to grab us a burger and fries. We lived in the Meadows Apartments right across the street. Everything is close now. If I wanted, I could grab a hold of him. Because, look, in my peripheral, there he is, backing out of the black glass door with my food. For a second, I take my eyes off the bumps of rain, now trailing down the glass like tears. And Shane says, here you go, bro, and hands me the styrofoam containers. I like this beat. The song is Nas, Life's a Bitch. It wraps around my memory like the color blue, my brother's young eyes, the smell of grease and the taste of salt in the wet parking lot. Thank y'all. Appreciate it.